Welcome to What's Up in Jeju, where I visit places around the island and talk about what's happening with hashtag Daily K's host, Peter Bint.
This, if you've not heard it before, despite listening to What's Up in Jeju, we've done it for a few months now, where we head to one of the, 172 villages in Jeju, maybe meet up with the village chief and find out a lot about a place. So where are we going today?
So, right, we are headed to the fabulous Ongpori. Have you ever heard of this village?
Ongpori?
Yeah.
No, first time.
Okay, well, you know what time it is. Bum, 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 bee. Map time.
You're not so good with your bum bums. You should have just clapped.
I should have just clapped. Okay, can you see? Can you see the map here?
Okay, so we got the airport in the north central side, and the red dot I'm assuming is Ongpori, so it's out to the west northwest side.
That is correct. And the little island above it is actually Biangdo, and we will talk about that later. But it's so small, you can't really see the shape of the kind of shape that I made in red. That actually has a lot to do with the name itself.
Oh, and what about Ongpori? Like, that just sounds interesting. Does it mean anything?
Right, so it actually comes from the shape of an ongi, and that's the type of Korean earthenware. It's a bit like a kimchi pot, you know, just like a brown pot with the lid on top. So if you actually look at the border, which Ongpori is very small, by the way, compared to some of the other villages we've gone to, it, you know, kind of looks like the little shape of the ongi.
Oh, that's kind of cool. I mean, we did the island shape leading to the name last week as well. But for, like, parts of the mainland, like a county with borders, you don't often name it after the border outline. That's kind of curious.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, I wonder, I'll have to keep an eye out for that for our future village ventures to see if there are other village names that have to do with kind of just the way that their borders are.
You better do indeedy. So we've got our first photo to put up here.
Yes.
Oh, that looks like a nice little stream.
That is correct. That is Ongpochan. Now, you see, Ongpori is known for its clean spring water straight from Halasan. So don't let that picture fool you. That water is coming straight from Halasan. And here's the thing. It's actually some of the cleanest water in the area, if not the island. Now, of course, back in the day when it comes to villagers, clean spring water was key, straight from the mountain. So ancient villages were formed around the natural spring waters, also called Yongchonsu. Now, Ongpori's water has been known to be, as I said, one of the purest in the area, making it a place for factories and villages to set up. And Ongpochan is where the largest underground spring in the western region flows. And not only does it have underground springs... Now, here's the thing about geography and water. Underground water is actually very clean, but it also serves as a significant water source in the western area of Jeju City, including Hallamup, through the surrounding Hallam Reservoir. So to understand more about the village, I met up with the village fisheries co-op chief, Mr. Park Il-young. Let me ask you this. Peter, can you guess what the head of a fisheries co-op does?
I'm going to guess harvest wheat every Tuesday.
Not wheat, but it does have something
surely,
to do.
Surely, the head of a fisheries co-op, isn't that like you're doing fishing, but in a kind of cooperative way, like working together, maybe not taking too much, etc., etc.?
Yeah, essentially, that's pretty on the dot, but it's essentially kind of like a management, almost a governmental role. You see, the thing is, you have your village chief. Now, we've talked to them before in past village ventures, right? They're essentially like the mayor of the town. But if your village is actually a part on the shore where it's near a body of water when it comes to fishing, you're going to have a fisheries co-op. And what this co-op does, it essentially helps villagers make money off of their harvest. Like, think of it this way. Like, you have these henya, right? You have these henya divers. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to admin stuff, when it comes to management and like, okay, I caught my catch. How are we going to make money off this? How am I going to make money? And how can this put money back into our town? That's where the fisheries co-op comes into play. And the reason why it's really important is you almost find that there's not like power, but just so the mayor is elected and they have their tenure, and so does the fisheries co-op head. But the fisheries co-op is like, it's been around since people have been on the island, right? So even though government officials and parties, they switch out, the fisheries co-op is just a constant. And not all villages, oh, as I said, has one. There are only 102 fisheries out of all the 170-some villages we talked about because of the water.
Where are we going to go to next, then? Did you get to explore the fisheries aspect of the village itself?
Yes, absolutely. So, Mr. Pak, he is our first personnel that is from the fisheries co-op, and we've met with village chiefs before, so this is really amazing. We've been really seeking somebody from the fisheries association from any of the villages. And what's incredible is that Mr. Pak, he gives us a glimpse of essentially what could be off limits to a lot of people. You'll see in the next video further on, it's a real treat because fishermen and henya are incredibly private. They're also incredibly prideful. So to actually kind of see what's behind the curtain, so to speak, is very rare. Unless, let's say, you are becoming a henyo or going to henyo diving school. But even then, it's kind of like a certain kind of aversion that they're letting you see. But Mr. Pak, he's just the head of fisheries. So he just like took us, and it was like, you know, there was a sense of like, are we supposed to, you know, be here? If we saw a henya, I'm sure they would just like chase us out of there. You know what I mean?
So we've got something to do with henya that you speak of in our next image.
Okay, this is pretty interesting. Why don't we take a look?
Ooh, what are all those orange box-like things? Are those the floats?
Very good. Now, these are called tewak. Now, it is the name of the buoys that are specifically used by henya. They are made of styrofoam. And what it does is it's attached to the hoop and the net is attached under it. And this contraption is the main tool of the henya. I had the chance to use it myself, if you remember, for my very first episode. It's incredible how this contraption is like your float. It's your gauge on where you are in the water. You can even use it to swim with, like almost like a life jacket. So it's everything to these women.
It is really cool. But these tewak, you called them, I didn't know that's what they were called, the shapes are interesting, aren't they? Usually round.
Yes, that's a very good point, and that's the first thing that Jaywa and I both like called out audibly to the fisheries co-op head. It's like, whoa, what's going on here? Uh-huh. These shapes are weird. Compared to what you're usually used to seeing is in our second picture here, and that's of me, if you take a look.
Yes, last time with your little round, almost like looks like a squash pumpkin.
Yeah, and that's what you're typically used to seeing. But actually, it really depends. The thing is, there's a couple factors when it comes to the shape of the tewak. First is region. The typical tewak you're used to seeing are from the eastern regions of the island. However, Ongpori's tewak is from the northwest, so that's where you'll find the shape.
Uh-huh.
Now, second, the initial picture that we showed just now of the first tewak, it doesn't really show the size of these things. These tewak are enormous by what you're kind of used to seeing. They're about, if you look at me, they're about like this size. They're huge, right? We couldn't, Jay and I immediately...
Like your torso.
Right.
Bigger than your torso.
Enormous. And the thing is, because the larger the tewak, the longer the henya can stay out and work. But that also kind of shows, it signifies... If you can stay out and work longer and dive deeper, that means your skill is higher. So it's a general indicator, the larger the tewak or the float, the higher skilled henya is with associated with such tewak.
Oh, my tewak is bigger than yours, I could imagine. So I was going to ask, Ongpori is not, well, from what we saw in the first clips at least, it doesn't look very touristy. But that dessert cafe certainly looked like a little hidden gem.
It is so funny because we asked Mr. Pak, the fisheries co-op head, like, hey, so are there any places that... And he's like, nah, you know, not really. But I don't know. You'll find in part three that there's another significant landmark in this tiny village, and it all has to do with that fresh spring water.
And I do have a question mark, if you can answer it. How long does it take to become a henyo? How long do you need to train? Also, who judges their skills as they move up to experienced and more experienced, and what skills are they, I wonder?
Right, I was actually in the middle of writing, responding to that just as we started. So I'm no expert, but I think we've covered it previously with maybe our previous reporter, but I'll just go by what I know off the top of my head. There are only just a few henyo schools on the island, and it really kind of depends when it comes to duration on the said schools. There's some on the northern side of the island, other on the south. So it comes down to the school and the village when it comes to duration. Now, you can go ahead and you can attend one of these schools and be, quote unquote, a certified henyo. You essentially go through, you get a certification. There's a principal of the school. There's a board. And I don't want to say it's novelty, but you go ahead and you can get certified. But if you want to, like, proper, be like a proper henyo and make a harvest and, like, live in this village, and that is a much steeper curve, because that's where then you just have to be in with the village, right? You have to be in with the women. Wow. You have to gain their respect if you want to truly become a full-on, for real. I'm not saying if you get that certification, you're a fake henyo. What I'm just saying is, like, if you want to, like, live there and harvest and do it, proper do it, then that's going to be, that could be, I mean, I can't tell you how long that could take. That really would depend on the fisheries co-op, like a person like Mr. Pak, who we just talked to, but also the head henyo as well. You need to gain her respect and the team of henyo, because, you know, you're out there. Everybody needs to feel safe out there. This is not for fun. This is a living, right? Yeah. So if you're going to do that, you know, it's going to take a bit more time and effort.
Much less linear if you want to do it for reals, it seems. So in the last part, Mark, I heard you're going to take us for a drink.
Yes, why don't we just dive into our last image? Why don't we take a look there? Take a look.
Oh, what are those bottles?
Well, let me ask you, what do you think those bottles are? What do you think?
I can now, looking closely, there's a little inscription of like a mountain there, it looks like. And I don't know, I guess being Jeju, it must be Halasan Mountain?
Yes, good guess. And this is a particular brand of soju based on Jeju, and it's the most famous brand from Jeju, and you'll find it on the mainland as well. We can't say the name, of course, for copyright issues and everything, but it's known for its blue label. It's known for its clear bottle, not green bottle.
Yeah.
And it's also known to be named after a particular mountain based on the island. Yes.
Yeah, that has become more readily available now up here on the mainland. I mean, it never really used to be, but now you can find it in many places. And these days it's not just the big corporate brands, but you'll see regional brands of soju, definitely in their hometowns, but also in Seoul as well. This one's been around for quite some time.
Yes, since 1950. And fun fact, 1950 is also the height of a certain type of mountain on Jeju, which is the biggest mountain in Korea. So it's the same height in meters approximately. So that's pretty cool. Started in 1950.
Wow.
Height of this mountain, 1950 meters. Now, based on what we talked about today when it comes to Ongpuri, can you guess why this factory is here?
Well, the water.
Yep. Ding dong dang. It's because of the fresh spring water, and it's actually marketed as part of this brand to be using this fresh spring water from a certain mountain. And so it's not a gimmick, right? It's actually literal, the cleanest water you can get off of the island.
Wow. That's amazing. Mark, thank you so much for that tour of Ongpongri. I never would have known that the factory for making soju was there, knowing why it was there as well. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. We went into this not really knowing any of these things either. So that's amazing. That's why I love this job, man. Thanks for having me.
Well, we can't wait to see what you've got up your sleeve for next week. Have a wonderful 7 days.
Thank you, sir. You too.
What's Up in Jeju is supported by the JDC, which is creating a free international city that resembles nature, embraces the future, and reaches the world. I'm Mark Wilson Che, with writer Choi Jung-yun. This is Arirang Radio.